I'd like to thank everybody for coming. Today's share, I don't know if Harvey announced it, I forgot from the last comedy minute what he said before. The share is sponsored on the fourth yard site of Kitabas David, mother of Devorah Berger and mother-in-law of Rabbi Moshe Berger. It's coming up this week, Thursday. Neshama Shavin Aliyah. Many people ask me, when do I start preparing for the next share? And the simple answer is, before I give the first share. You know, already on Shabbos, I already have to start thinking what I'm doing next week. And definitely, in the beginning of the week, I already have to figure out, okay, what's going to be for next Sunday. This share, I finalized, I'm doing this topic, the lone witness, the Torah's view on Eid Echad. I finalized it last Monday. And there's a story behind it. All my years living in New York, I never served jury duty. New York, there are so many different ways how to get out of it, legally.
You're too smart.
Yeah, I never ended up going to jury duty. Never. I move to the state of Florida. I get the jury duty notice in the mail. I didn't ignore it. I read through it. And I went through. There are very limited ways to get out of it. And none of them applied to me. And I felt it was my civic duty. And I didn't think I could just throw it away. So I followed through. I pushed it off. Originally, I got called to jury duty in Elul. But Elul is very busy, and Shiva especially. So I asked. So we pushed it off till last Monday. Now, I was there in jury duty from 8 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock at night, straight.
Civil.
I was in Miami-Dade Criminal Court. And aside from the fact I tremendously missed being in yeshiva and learning a regular schedule here in yeshiva, but I had an absolutely fascinating day. All these people around me were kvetching, they can't stand it. I was mamash having a blast. I came back with tons of stories from yeshiva, fully armed. I was sitting there in the courts, and I literally chazered half a dozen sugyas and shas that came up in the court cases. I was a kid in a candy store. My intellectual curiosity was overcoming me.
Next stop, law school.
Yeah. Not for me. But I was really enjoying it, and it was very, very interesting. And there are many stories, some that I will not share here in public, that occurred to me. But one thing in particular I'd like to share, and that's the basis of today's share. The way it works when you go to sit on the jury poll, right, is they take a poll of 35 people, randomly selected together, and they bring you to the courtroom. There you meet quite an official stage. You have the judge, who gives a discourse on the basic issues in general of law and some issues pertinent to the case. And he looks to see if there's anyone in the jury pool that really isn't fit to serve on the jury. After the judge goes through different issues, then you have the state, the prosecutor, who talks about the case, followed by the defense lawyer, or in some cases lawyers, who also talk about the case. And what they're really fishing for, they give you a little bit of the details of the case, not the full details, but a decent amount of details in the case. And they're searching for it to see, are these jurors, would they help my case or hurt my case? And they don't really, are not supposed to put out their arguments. In fact, in both of the, I ended up seeing two different cases. Got dismissed from both. But two different criminal cases I saw. And in each case, you know, the lawyer would jump up, objection, Your Honor, you know, pretrial, that the lawyers may be giving out too many details, trying to fish out people. Most of the time, the judge overruled it. But it was very, very interesting. One of the cases was a pretty serious case of battery and threatening with a weapon. And of course, in both cases I had, the judge was a Jew, the lawyers were Jews. It was quite heavily...
The defendant.
I'm sure.
He said battery.
Anyway, so in one of the cases, in one of the cases, it seemed from the defense lawyer's line of questioning, basically the only evidence they had against this defendant, the state had it against the defendant, was the testimony of one witness. And of course, Florida statute, not the victim, allows for one witness to be admissible evidence in a court of law. But they were trying to feel out the jury, would you basically put a guy away in jail for life based on the testimony of one witness? And that was an issue that people were debating and people were sitting with, and I voiced my opinion there too, which I'll not tell you at the moment until after we do the share. So I would like to work through that concept today here in the share. The concept, what does the Torah review a lone witness? Is that something which is acceptable, not acceptable? We'll first view it from the perspective of halacha, and then we'll try to take it practically, in practical halacha, and even to what that means, even for a regular secular court case. Now, simply put, there's a pasuk in the Torah called Gadol B'Din, Al Pi Shnayim Edim Yakum Davar. The Torah's requirement in general is you have to have two witnesses. It's not enough to have one witness. The Torah says you have to have two. Al Pi Shnayim Edim Yakum Davar. However, there are multiple instances you find in the Torah where one witness is good enough. By dint of the fact that you find one witness good enough, one could say, look, if the Torah accepts one aid in certain circumstances, then there's obviously something to one witness. Maybe there's different levels, different cases. Some cases have to have two, but the Torah accepts one witness. I'd like to go through, analyze those cases. There's four basic areas where we find in Torah that one witness is allowed. One topic which we'll go through extensively is Eid Echa Neman B'Yisurin. Is there the cases of Isser V'Heter? You know, is that piece of meat kosher or treif? You know, is there an issue with the mikvah? Is a woman kosher? Is she different? Does she have an issue of a nida? There are many, is truma and maisa taken off from these fruits? There are many instances of eid echa neman b'yisurin, which is one concept which you'll spend time on. Second area you find in halacha is eid echa b'misas b'ayla. Mishumiguna, there's a concept that we accept one witness to testify that a woman's husband died, and therefore the woman's allowed to get remarried. Now, just to simplify things, major machlokasim in the Gemara Yevamos about this concept, we've shown him and stuff, but the simple approach of Tosfos seems that this is only a din derabban. Really, midaraisa, we never would allow one aid. But the concept of chamin, yishumiguna kilu barabanon, the rabbis have the right in such a case to say one aid is good enough. But if you take that position, there's no proof from that topic to our issue in debating is one aid good enough on the Torah level. There might just be a din derabanan. A third area you find aid achad, not really practical today. Is an eid echa could be mechayiv, could obligate a person to make a shvua, to swear about something. But that also, you're not conclusively be mechayiv of a person, obligate a person to pay money. All the Eidei Echad is doing is a point in the process. Well, if you have an Eidei Echad, then the person has to swear against the Eidei Echad. Nothing conclusive over there either. And the fourth topic you find in the Torah where an Eidei Echad is believed and used is by a sota, a woman who goes astray. There, we allow one witness to see the kinoi nesira. For that part of the process, one aid is good enough. But again, that's only a part of the process. It's not the final issue involved. So there's no conclusive proof by these latter three topics of the Torah's view of an Eid al-Qad finalizing the matter, making a person chayiv something. There you don't find that. But the one area I'd like to spend time on to begin with is Eid al-Qad Nemun Bisr. There seemingly, and it's something which in many cases is halacha l'maisa, we do rely many, many times on an Eid al-Qad by cases of Yisurin. Right? The most simple example, I know I have some people from the kashrus world over here, so I have to be careful. But we know we do require a kashrus certification of a restaurant for various reasons, which I'm not going into today. However, you eat by your neighbor's house. You're eating by your neighbor. Who gives kashrus on your neighbor's kitchen?
My neighbor.
The answer is Mr. Rogers, your neighbor. The person in the house, they're the ones saying, end of the day, the buck stops here, that my kitchen is kosher. The products in their kitchen might have halakhic certification, but there's a lot that could go wrong from the time you buy it in a nice kosher store to the time you serve it. So how could I eat in your house? Answer is, Eid al-Qad never be certain. How could I eat your fruits? If you're living in Eretz Yisrael, you take off Trumas and Maisros. Eid al-Qad never be certain. There are many issues practically that we use Eid al-Qad never be certain for. What's the source of Eid al-Qad never be certain? So that you can find on your sheets. There's a Gemara in Gittin, a few Gemaras in Shas that talk about the concept of using an Eid al-Qad by cases of Isser v'Heter. And Tosos over there asks a question, Menalon Eid al-Qad Nami Bisurin, what's the source, where do we know it from, that an Eid al-Qad is believed by a case of Isser? So Tosos answers, V'yesh Lomar, the Alfina Mi Nida. We learn it out from the case of a Nida, the Darshin and Perek HaMadir, that we learn out in Perek HaMadir, this Safra La La'atzma. She should count for herself. Concept of a woman who is in Nida counting her days of Tumah, that Tosa says, and many other Rishonim follow him, is a source for Eid al-Qad Nami Bisurin. So it's a pasuk, according to Tosa and many Rishonim. In fact, this works out pretty well, a nice tie into this week's Parsha. This week's Parsha, you find Avraham Avinu originally offered, you know, we're going to find in this coming week's Parsha, Chazal say about Avraham Avinu that he was Emor Ma'at Va'aseh Harbe. He said little but did a lot. But just for the record, Avraham Avinu didn't do fully what he said. When he offers the guest, this past week's Parsha, on the list of food that he offered them was bread. When he followed through and the Pasuk says what he gave them, the Torah leaves out bread. And Rashi is bothered by what happened to the bread. So Rashi says over there in this week's Parsha that Sarah became a Nida, which at that point the bread that she was baking became Tameh. Avraham Avinu was Makbed. We're not Nogea nowadays. But Avraham Avinu was Makbed that all food should be tar. And he wouldn't serve Malachim bread, which is Tameh, because his wife was Tameh. That means by definition, Avraham Avinu didn't know beforehand. His wife just became a Nida. That's why he originally offered bread. Then Avraham Avinu found out. How did he find out? How is he going to know when she's tar? Eid al-Qad Nami Bisurin, his wife. So there are different opinions when this happened. Shapiro had a nice question he asked Friday night. Yeah. But simply put, the din of Nida, the din of a woman talking to her husband and testifying personally what her status is, that Tosa says is a source for Eidach HaNemer B'Sarim. However, if you look in Rashi's, Rashi seems to have a different take. Just Rashi over there in Gittin, he says, Eidach HaNemer B'Sarim. Rashi says, Sharei Yemina Torah, Kol Echa Ve'echa Mi'Yisrael, Al Frashas Truma. Torah believes just one person, every person in Klal Yisrael, in Israel, Al Frashas Truma, and separating Truma, Al Shechita, on the kashrus of the meat you're eating, Al Nikar HaGid, taking off the Gid HaNasha, V'Achelev, and on the fats. So all these things, in Eidach is believed. Rashi here doesn't quote a pasuk. My Talmidim was wanting to medayik from the fact that Rashi doesn't quote a pasuk. Maybe its mashmi doesn't hold like that. But it's even more clear in the Rashi in Yevamos. The Gemara in Yevamos there is talking originally about an Eichad by Misa's Baila, but expands to the whole idea of Eichad Nemer B'Sarim. Rashi there says a Svara in the third line. He says, Vadi Pshitalon, it's definitely simple to us, to some Chidon Olam, that we trust one person, Koz Man Shlo Nechta, assuming this person has a Cheskas Kashrus, not someone who a suspect for lying. Dim Lo Kein, Lavach, if not for this, Ein Lecha Adam Ocha Mishal Chaveiro. Rashi says there's a logic here. If we don't trust one aid, how could a person ever eat by his neighbor's house? Ein Lecha Adam Somach Abnei Beso. Worse than that, how could you eat in your own house? How do you trust your wife, your daughters, your children? It must be, Rashi says, Eidach HaNemer B'Sarim. Sounds like from Rashi, and this is the grip that many Achronim take, is that Rashi's position is Eidach is really a Svara. It's a logic. You don't need a pasuk to derive this din of Eidach HaNemer B'Sarim. It's something purely logical. Even if the Torah would write a pasuk, I'd be able to think about that by myself. Now, that's a pretty high standard. And there's the regular din of the Eidos in the Torah, Bishnai Me'yakam Dover. Simply put, we only know that from the Pasuk. Rashi seems to be saying over here that the din of an Eidach is a logical din. We know the rule in the Torah. The Torah only wrote halachas and psukim to teach us things when we need to. But there are many things that the Torah says svara. Prelumbly, if something's logical, you don't need a pasuk. Rashi seems over here to be saying the source of Eidach is a complete logic and you don't need a pasuk to teach it to me. What's that svara? Well, because, hey, how are you going to eat in your own house? How are you going to eat by your neighbors? It has to be that we believe in Eidach logically. For the record, some Rishonim already take offensive Rashi, I don't know. Maybe you do need to have hire a mashkiach for your kitchen. It's a simple logic, really. Now, what makes Rashi even more complicated, which is this, I don't have an answer. I spent a little time on this in Sher, in Yeshiva, and I didn't have an answer for this. There's a Rashi in Chulin, where there the Gemara has a Havamina, besides a Shochet showing his knife to begin with, to a Rav to make sure that his knife is kosher. But really, in between every Shechita, he should have to show his knife to a Rav. Yeah. Why is it that he's allowed to just shecht with that knife? Based on just his own personal checking that knife doesn't have a nick, that the knife is kosher. So the Gemara in Chulin, in Daf Yudim of Days, answers, Eidach HaNemer B'Sarim. And over there, Rashi doesn't say the svara that he wrote over here in Yevamos, or perhaps that he's mashma and get it. Rashi says the source of Eidach is a pasuk by Shechita. And the Chassam Sofer, for example, asks on Rashi, that Rashi seems to be in seer, in contradiction. In Yevamos, in Gittin, there you thought a svara suffice, but over here in Chulin, seems that he needs a pasuk. The Chassam Sofer leaves with a question. Rashi here is quoting a pasuk. So that itself, yeah.
Over here, it's more when there's nothing wrong. You just want to know if you can eat. I can eat in somebody else's kitchen. So they have to do something wrong in order for it not to be good. In case of Shechita, it's a little bit more with the check of Shia, these things, it's a tircha to check the knife, it's a tircha to clean the knife, it's a tircha to fix the knife. I need a stronger level of a, it's not that he can't just not make sure nothing bad happens, he has to make sure it's good.
Very nice. I found the Rebbe Yashov on the Sefer in Chulin says something along those lines. I have some issues with it, but I'll talk to you later. Nice idea, you're right. Perhaps I will explain why this case is different. But I saw many Achronim take a very interesting position. And they say, really, Eid Achad, Nemet B'Yisurin, doesn't have significance for our discussion about the din of Eidos. There are those who say Eid Achad is a regular din of Eidos, but other Achronim say Eid Achad Nemet B'Yisurin is what you call a din of Nemonis. Let me explain. What does that mean? It's a Eidos is something I believe testimonial evidence. I'm taking this person's words at face value. I trust him. And therefore, I'm accepting what he said as evidence of what happened. There are other circumstances that we say it's not a testimony which is a proof. It's more like a physical evidence. I know, look, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. Right? If there's evidence you find in the situation, that itself is a proof, could provide for us a window into what happened. When we say Eid Achad Nemet B'Yisurin, we're not really, it's not because I trust him like an aid in this classic testimonial evidence. Really, it's as if I found some physical evidence over here. It's a bearer, it's a clarification on what happened. But don't view this as a classic type of Eidos. One example the Achronim bring to support such a position, usually Eidos could only be given inside a courtroom. I can't give Eidos in my house. Maybe nowadays with Skype, but halachically, you have to give Eidos, has to be entered into a courtroom. The din of Eid Achad will never be certain, you don't find it in the courtroom. You can do it wherever. Normal Eidos also, the second proof they bring, requires, you know, certain people, you have to be a gadol, you can't be a katan, you have to be a man, you can't be a woman. There are different qualifications for dina Eidos. Eid Achad Nemet B'Yisurin, it's a gadol, some cases might even be a katan. So that itself might be indicative, the Achronim say. The Eid Achad Nemet B'Yisurin is not a classic issue of Eidos, but rather it's a general clarification on the circumstance. And therefore, if we want to have a discussion, well, does the Torah accept one aid, even this din of Eid Achad Nemet B'Yisurin, especially, I would say, according to Rashi, because Rashi is saying it's a svara, it's purely logical. Now, perhaps, for a din eidos, you can't make that up yourself. You can't make up a testimony one aid is good enough. It's only because there's a certain clarification on the case which logically I would grant, yeah, and Eid Achad provides something. Maybe that's what Rashi is saying. But beyond that, to say that's a real din of Eidos, not so pashut. Perhaps one could say that in Tosfos, but in Rashi, not so pashut. So to conclude from the sugya of Eid Achad Nemet B'Yisurin, I don't think there's anything conclusive about our discussion whether one aid is believable or not in Torah standards, because first of all, it's machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, what the source is. Tosa says it's a pasuk, and yeah, perhaps in Tosas it is a din in Eidos, and maybe Taki Dusi 1-8 has some value. But definitely within Rashi, it's more confusing what Rashi Shita is. Rashi says it's a svara, it's purely logical. What's purely logical? You could have 1-8, or that an 8 could function as any other proof you would use to the circumstance of what went on in the case. So that's part A of Paul. Understanding it Achad Nemet B'Yisurin. If you go down into the Rishonim, I found that seems to be a major machlokas Rishonim about this topic. Does the Torah give credence to an Eid Achad or not? So there's a Tosfos Rosh later on in Gittin, Daf Yom Beis. It's on your sheets, letter Dalet. He writes, starting from the second line, Yesha wrote in Ladaptik Mikan, some that want to prove from the sig over there with involving our kos, a secular quartz. Sharotzim Ladaktik Mikan, the Mashat Srika Torah Shne Edim, that which the Torah requires to Edim, Long Ishim the Chad Choshim the Shaker, it's not because one witness we're afraid is going to lie. No. El Xeras Melachu. It's what you call Xeras HaKosav from Hashem. Kidam Rinan Gavi Krovin, Moshe V'Aram, Vamishim Delom Nehemne. The reason why Moshe and Aaron can testify together is not because they're not believed. Rather, it's Xerav Hashem. That's a shita that the Tosafot Rashi brings. And Tosafot Rashi himself says, V'nir de'ein ra'ya mikad. He goes on to say, you can't prove it from over here. What's the Tosafot Rashi bringing here? There's a concept that comes up a lot in learning that there are some things which are logical in the Torah. For that, you don't need a pasuk. There are other things, this I'll call level two, which, look, I would have no right to make this halacha up by myself. But once the Torah makes up that halacha, it's very logical to explain. I can explain why the Torah did that. Alpha and brisk, that's the way that most people try to understand the Torah. Is anytime you see something in the Torah, you try to give the most logical, plausible explanation for that din. And yeah, we try to understand it, try to apply that halacha that did. There's a third area, which definitely exists in many cases. You know, we dab it sometimes, it's called para aduma. There's a certain area in halacha you sometimes find that's xeris hakasav. Xeris melech. This is what Hashem said. Do we understand why Hashem said this? Not for any good reason, no. But this is the law. Sit back and accept it. What the Tosafot Rashi over here is bringing is really there's nothing weak about 1-8. It's not that I'm afraid that if you have one witness, he's going to lie. And therefore, Tovim Hashnayim and Echad, two is better than one, and I'll hedge my bets with two rather than one. That's not what the Torah is saying. The Torah is saying do not deduce from here that 1-8 is not good. 1-8 is just as good as 2-8. But you know what? This is the din. What color do your tefillin have to be? They have to be black. Okay? So you know what? There's a din, you have to have 2 eidim. But don't deduce from here. You have no right to prove from here that one witness is not valid. That's what the Tosafot Rashi brings. I found that this idea is not just a Tosafot Rashi. There's a Rashba, which might really be a Ramban, who also says like that, I found the Aruch HaShulchan in Simen Choshen Mishpat, Simen Chav Gimel, brings down this Rashba as a valid approach in Halacha. I saw the Ksos HaChoshen in Simen Lamed Os Sakat and Tes, also clearly says this position. Halacha and Maisa, we were paskin that 1-8 is believable. There's no reason. You know why we don't accept 1-8? Xeris HaKosav. The same way we accept Para Aduma, Mataris, Tameim, Tamis Taharim, the tefillin have to be black, many other halachas. We also accept the Torah says 2-8, but not because 1-8 has any Kshashak. That's the opinion of Tosafot Rashi, brings the Rashba and down to the Ksos Aruch HaShulchan. However, like many issues, in fact, at one point, a nice Jewish defense attorney turned to me, Rabbi, do you think you're always right? I'm not sure why he felt he needed to ask me that question. And I said, no. I said, in fact, you know, we spend all day arguing. I was about to tell him the joke, but I didn't want to too long, you know, ask, you know, two Jews how many opinions you get. Yes.
Maybe it was a political question.
Right? Especially a rabbi who told them, oh, by the way, guess what topic I'm lecturing on in class right now? One witness. Boy, I was there.
Should have said it.
I got off.
Would have gotten sent home.
Actually, I really want to get, maybe some of the people in the law world over here can help me. I really like to get the transcripts of my court appearance. The stenographer is writing down everything I said, including when I described to the judge that his argument is faulty because the defendant doesn't have a cheskos kashrus, because there's clearly a reasa on his cheskos kashrus. He decided to speak three languages, so I added a fourth to the court. I explained it first, but I said that's clearly a reasa on the cheskos kashrus.
You probably
and Judge Milton Hirsch was a little taken aback. He turned to the stenographer and it was like, not sure if he fully understood the concept, but he got it. Anyway, somebody will help me get the court records. So I found an arguing opinion, another Rishon, the Shalos Teshuvos Tashbats. If you look in the bottom of your sheets, he writes, I'll read from the first line, Shachilak bein edacha v'shnei edim, the difference the Torah places between one aid and two edim, whom yishum chashash sheker. Sheyesh chashash mu'at beidacha shem shaker. There is some degree of a chashash, of a fear, that if you have one aid is lying. Any one person could lie. And many different potential jurists will all bring up their horror stories of their neighbor and their cousin that they know that, you know, once I was convicted for no good reason. And one aide lied, and I don't trust people anymore in life. Okay? You know, they accepted that to get people off.
They kick the prosecution, will kick those people.
Correct. So the Tashbats supports that opinion. The Tashbats says that if you have one witness, even though the odds are he's telling the truth, that we say people have a cheskos kashrus for, a random person off the street, not nogea b'davar, and not somebody that we know has believability issues. A random person off the street, we believe, he has a cheskos kashrus. However, is there a possibility that he's lying? Of course there is. It's a small possibility. So the Tashbat says, but for that small possibility, the Torah says, hey, when we're doing a court case, we're doing halacha, we want to make sure we get it right. And that's the reason why you need to aid them. Aid up, but it's not enough. Now, he says further, which is quite interesting, the kasuv shom behemshech should be suri mahani aid up. He learns aid up and nem yisurin, like simply originally presented, is a din in aid us. If aid up and nem yisurin is a din in aid us, how come over there we trust an aid if it's a chashash of sheker? He's going to lie. So he says, "Yisurim mehani edacha kiva shabezeh sagil neman edacha kiva shachash b'sheker shal edacha humu and ma'od." Yisurim sagil bezeh. For a case of edacha, for a case of yisurim, you know what? There, maybe perhaps there you'd use Rashi's svara that we're stuck and we really need. It's hard to operate. In cases of Israhat, they're requiring to aid him all the time. So there, the Torah said, you know what? We'll accept one aid to testify in such cases. Because anyway, the odds of him lying is minimal. But for all other cases, there the Torah has a higher standard, and we need to aid him because there still is a possibility that one might lie. And further, he goes on to state a case which actually came up with me. At one point, I did raise my hand that I do have a little bit of a problem with the din of b'nei achad. And the defense attorney asked me, Rabbi, do you like the NFL? So I said, actually, right now, I have a little problem. So I throw some political views there, too.
That'll kick you off, too.
Yeah. And then she went further. Well, let's say you're at a football game. I'm like, not happening in this environment. And then she goes on to describe, well, if you saw the football clearly go through the uprights, as one witness, you wouldn't be comfortable testifying, but that's a field goal? Come on, Rabbi.
What's a field goal?
And no, I didn't feign ignorance on that. But I did say back, I said, I'm sorry, miss, but there's a difference between the two cases. There's one thing telling me that I witnessed something together with 50,000 other people in a stadium. That's not just one witness testifying. That's really what you call Dover and Nir L'chor Olam, which is actually the next line in Tashbats, which he says, that's different than the case of an Eid Acha. Because there, everyone is witnessing something, not just you. That's a much bigger difference than the case of where it's one person in the alleyway that saw this thug beat up a person. And she was dumbfounded. And that was the end of me in that case, too.
But in a football game, there are two referees by the goal line.
That's it.
I'll be shnai, you made him yalkum dover.
There are also two ones.
Now, one more thing, just to give it an example. The Tashbats goes on to prove his position that really an Eid Acha is the reason why he's not valid is because there's some degree of a chashash of sheker. He believes he has a proof to his position from a Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara talks about this issue of an Eid Acha testifying when a woman's husband died. The Gemara says, it's a little confusing, steers and Gemaras. I spent some time on that last year. But there's a Gemara in Kuf Tes Vav that talks about that the reason why we believe in Eid Acha is because it's a milsa da'avide l'gluye. When you have a situation where the facts of the case are going to get out, it's possible that the facts of the case could get out. You're testifying that a guy is dead. If he's alive, he could surface somewhere. So that's a fear that any witness would have. I'm testifying that guy's dead, but if I'm wrong and he's alive, boy, do I have pie in my face. So a situation where the facts potentially could come out, there the Gemara says, I accept an Eid Acha. Tashbats infers from there, what do we see? The reason why not to accept an Eid Acha is because we're afraid of the small possibility that he's lying. But in a case of where you have proof and proof that he must be telling the truth because he could get in real trouble when the facts of the case come out, so there we do accept the Eid Acha. The Tashbats wants to prove conclusively from here that the reason that we don't accept the Eid Acha is only because of a certain degree of a chashash of sheker. But that's why, the Torah says, we normally require, maybe the NFL too, two witnesses to see something.
But before the Beis Din, they're going to question it. So the testimony of seeing that somebody died would have to be extremely detailed.
Correct. That is true. Is the cross-examination that Beis Din gives, I'm sure is better than most lawyers will provide. But Alpha PK, there still is room. The Tashbats is taking that into account. Even after you bring up, the idea of a drisha b'chakira, Beis Din cross-examines, and Beis Din checks the Edom, but still, there is some chashash that they're lying. He still could get through that. And therefore, that's why the Torah says, one is not good enough, you have to have two. This position, I found the halacha, the Nesivos HaMishpat, the arch-nemesis of the Ksos, takes this position, that we don't trust an Eid Acha. It's interesting, he actually gives two reasons. One reason he gives is chashash sheker. But another spot, he writes, because maybe Sami's mistaken. Maybe he made a mistake in analyzing the situation. I'm not sure that's a stira. Both reasons work together. There's a certain percentage of chance that what the aide said is not true, either because he's lying, or because he might make a mistake. Even after all the drisha v'chakiras, all the checking, he might make a mistake. So what emerges from here, seemingly, is there's a major machlokas rishonim, followed by a machlokas achronim. Does the Torah believe in Eid Acha or not? The first opinion goes to Rush, followed by Ksos and Aruch HaShulchan, will say yes, the Torah would believe in Eid Acha, but it's Gzeiras HaKalos of a special din. The Torah requires two, but really there's something to what one witness says, but the other Rishonim, the Tashbats, and really, neglected to mention, I found the Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Shin Lamed Aleph, Bayit Echad and Parsha Shoftim, they say that Eid Echad is a chashash that he's lying, or chashash that he's making a mistake. And with them goes in Yeshivas, the Paschal Malacha, like that. And therefore, according to them, you really can't trust in Eid Echad. So if I stop right here, which is basically where I was before last night, is it looks like, look, it's a Machlokas Rishonim, Machlokas Achronim. Does the Torah validate the opinion of one aid or not? Machlokas Rishonim, Machlokas Achronim. But there's a very interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Zayin Amud Beis. I didn't put the Gemara itself on the sheets, but I brought a Chazon Ish that quotes the Gemara. The Gemara is just one line. The Gemara says, we're willing to kill. We know that the Ben Noach, a Gentile, from the Torah's perspective, logically, is L'chuyiv in seven mitzvahs, Zayin mitzvahs B'nei Noach. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin over there says, we would kill a guy, a Gentile, based on just one aid. Which fits perfectly with secular laws. We would put a person to death with one aid. That's what the Gemara says over there in Sanhedrin. What's the reason for the Gemara? If the Torah says you need to have two Edim by Jewish courts, why by a secular court, by a Gentile, does the Torah say that one witness is good enough to put him to death? So the Chazon Ish, which is quoted in the back of your sheets, gives an interesting idea. The Chazon Ish says the din of Eid Echad, why the Torah does not accept an Eid Echad, is a Gzeres HaKasav. It's a Gzeres Melech. That special Gzeres HaKasav is only the right of Jews. The Torah wrote for Jews, you need to have to aid them. But the Gzeres HaKasav does not apply to Goyim. And therefore, you could kill a person based on Eid Echad. Similarly, there are other halachas in the Torah. Right, the whole concept of shiurim, right? We have shiurim. On Pesach, we know what shiurim are, right? That you have size limits on different things in halacha. That's only for Jews. For example, right? Just came up a couple weeks ago in the Parsha by a Ben Noach, actually, yeah, stoned to it. By a Ben Noach, the halacha would be even pachas mishal v'pruta, would be considered geneva, get married with it, I don't know. Right? The shiurim that the Torah has only apply to Jews. The Gentiles, they don't work with these different shiurim and measurements that we have. So too, there's a special law in the Torah that you need to have two edim for most cases. That's a law which only applies to Jews, but not the Gentiles. So therefore, the simple pshat in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, when the Gemara says, in Eid Echad, we would kill a person with, a Gentile with. That's because the Chazon Ish says it's a Gzeres HaKasav. The Gzeres HaKasav doesn't apply to a guy. Question, though, is what about the second opinion we just gave? We just gave an opinion of the Tashbach and the Sefer HaKinah and the Nesivos that the din of an Eid Echad is a logical din. The reason why the Torah doesn't accept Eid Echad is because of the chashash he's going to lie. So, how come in a secular court could we stomach the fact they're killing somebody with just one aid? There's a chashash he's going to die. There's a chashash that someone's lying here, putting someone to death for no reason. Is our blood redder than theirs? How do you understand it? According to the Chazon Ish, according to the first opinion, that really one aid is sufficient. Torah made in Gzeres HaKasav a special din. You need to have two. Okay, so that special din doesn't apply to a guy. By him, Pasuk Mishal Pruta, you know, doesn't matter. Okay. But according to, if you say that it's a real chashash, if it's a real fear that the one witness might become a lie, might be mistaken, how can we put someone to death based on the Eid Echad? What's Pshat in that Gemara? So, I found very interesting the Netziv, in a Sefer HaMikdavar, in Parshas Noach, Perek Tes, Pasuk Vav. I have to track that one down. But I also found late last night in his Sefer Merom Sada on Sanhedrin over there, he says the same thing. And the Netziv says, there's a very important clarification for that Gemara. When does the Gemara say that you can kill somebody, you can kill a Gentile based on Eid Echad? That's only Eid Echad who you know is the most honest, is honest Abe. Eid Echad you know is beyond reproach. And Eid Echad for sure is telling the truth. But a regular person? No. The Gemara would never say a regular person you could kill a Gentile with. For that, you would need to. Such a qualification fits very well with his second opinion. Really, there is a chashash shaker by one egg. And the Gemara would not say even by a Gentile they can kill him based on one egg. The Gemara there is talking about a circumstance where you have someone who's muchs the kashrus, someone who you know for sure he's telling the truth. Now, for the record, something like that in the Torah, Pashem Shah wouldn't work for a case of Misa. There are cases, and this I found is a tshuva from Ramosha, where there is a lot of discussion, even outside the realm of the Surin. If you have one person who you fully trust, couldn't you believe that person? Granted, the Torah says you need to have to aid them, but you fully trust this person. Can you trust them? And there's actually a source, there's a Gemara in Ksubas on Pehei Amud Aleph, where the Gemara makes a statement, pretty funny statement, that one of the Amoraim over there said he believes Bas Rav Chisda more than Rav Papa. And the Mefarshim tried to explain, like, Rav Papa was a great Jew. Why does he believe Bas Rav Chisda more than that? And the Rav Moshe goes and proves from that Gemara that there's a certain thing, if you know somebody, you've been with them for years, they never lie, they always tell the truth, it's fully honest, they're very smart, they didn't miss a detail. There is such a thing, beyond cases of some Yisurin, that you could rely on that. There's such a thing. But for Misa in a Jewish court, that we wouldn't rely on. But the Netziv is learning, perhaps for a Gentile court, for a court case involving a Gentile, one would be allowed to kill a Gentile with someone who's muchsik b'kashrus. But you're right. Anybody less than that, any one simple witness, we would agree with the Torah's position. Hey, even for a Jew, there's a chashash sheker. Same thing we would say for a Gentile, and you wouldn't be able to kill them. I found last night a very, very interesting additional step. The Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Kuf Tzadi He. There it's dealing with the idea of immoral relationships, and he's talking about obviously a very severe topic in Judaism. Right? In fact, that's one of the things we lane on Mincha by Yom Kippur. Like, what's the topic we're laning? Like, you know, severious, immoral relationships. That's what we talk about on Mincha on Yom Kippur. And the Sefer HaChinuch mentions that, you know what? To put people to death for an immoral relationship, whether it's a Jew or a Gentile, for that you need to have two edim. And the Sefer Minchas HaChinuch right over there does something which I'm not sure he does so often. Pretty sure he doesn't. He says, call the printers. There's a printing mistake in the Sefer HaChinuch. Right? I was a kid, I got for my bar mitzvah gift, the rabbi gave me a nice Sefer HaChinuch. You know, I'm not sure if they changed the printing. The Minchas HaChinuch says there's a printing mistake over here. It's impossible to answer the Sefer HaChinuch. How could he say you need to have two witnesses to kill a Gentile by immoral relationships? The Gemara in Sanhedrin and Zion Lebeis clearly says one aid is good enough. What's pshat? And he says the only conclusion he could say, that's the worst possible answer, everything was saved. Go back, find the manuscript. It must be somebody messed up along the way. When all else fails in rabbinic literature, blame the printer. However, I did find the Sefer Shar HaMishpat on, talks about this Sefer HaChinuch. He says a beautiful idea. He says if you use the idea that we just said before from the Nitziv, from the Hamak Davar, the Gemara over there, when it says we could kill a person based on one aid, it's a very limited case. It has to be talking about a case where someone's most of the kashrus. Someone we know is telling the truth. But short of that, could you kill one person, kill a Gentile with one aid? Absolutely not. Because the Torah standard for that is two aid. We're afraid maybe someone's going to lie. And that's what the Sefer HaChinuch was writing. Granted, the Gemara says one aid is allowed, but that's in limited cases. Most of the time, we will not be able to kill a Gentile with one aid. You need to have two aidim. And therefore, that's how the Shar HaMishpat defends the Sefer HaChinuch. Don't blame the printer. Now, practically speaking, okay. Now, I'm not coming here to address a person who is a lawyer, especially a criminal lawyer. What can you and can't you do al pi Torah to defend your client? That's a very difficult parsha. Not simple. Obviously, you have to try to do the truth. But they have nice phrases, right in front of the judge. You know, all that we do here is we labor to understand the truth, nothing but the truth. Okay? So help us God. But I saw the Chazon Ish made a very, very interesting comment, Malach. Very interesting. That the Chazon Ish wanted to say, of course, when you're involved in a secular court system, you're operating the laws of secular court. In fact, that was the judge's argument against me at one point. He's like, Rabbi, if I instruct you to use the laws of the court, can you not use the laws of the court? He's right. Of course I couldn't say the laws of the court. But specifically when it comes to Eidos, the Chazon Ish said, not so simple to say. Because when it comes to Eidos, of course the secular law can make laws. They're supposed to make laws. That's one of the assignments that's been made known. But when you talk about witness testimony, that's a mirror, that's a universal logic of what we have here. Do we have something we can rely on or not? Well, I'm going to rely on one witness. Not so simple. If the Torah is really afraid, the Torah is telling us what the truth is, what the emes is, what kochas and nefesh is, what really goes on in the world. If we have to be afraid of people lying, that's not just like any other law on the books. That's something which we have to take the Torah's universal truth to heart. The Torah says when you have one witness, you have to be afraid. Maybe he's telling, maybe he's lying, maybe he's made a mistake. Not so simple. So thus, the Chazon Ish distinguishes, of course we have to follow secular law, and you can judge based on secular law in a secular court. But there are certain things which are universal truths. We're trying to understand what is, should we accept testimony of one witness? The Chazon Ish says, not so simple. The Torah is putting a stamp, Api Shnayim Eidin Al Dover, two is better than one. And therefore, when you want to measure something under the fact you have one witness, not so simple. And thus, I'd like to conclude today's share. You know, Tovim Hashnayim Min HaEchad. Somebody asked me before, you know, a lot of things in the Torah were machshav, the number two. Right? Lo tov heyos adam levado. Torah says it's not good for a person to be alone. Obviously, the concept of marriage is a basic fabric of Judaism. But who would do when it comes to learning? We say tovim hashnayim min ha'echad. The idea of learning b'chavrusa, when you bounce ideas, really it's the same principle. When you bounce in a person's own mind, wow, what I'm saying is so right. Okay, until you bounce it off somebody else. And they hear it, they fight you back, and that debate causes a clearer conclusion in your mind. That's really the Torah's understanding of Eidos. You saw something by yourself. What exactly did I see? When it's bounced off, and it's challenged, and it's clarified with somebody else, get a better picture, a better understanding. When we, the Besdin, we the observers, are more comfortable trusting what it's not just your word, it's somebody else's word. And Be'ezus Hashem, we should all be Zocha only to find the truth.